moet ik nog zeggen, de tranentrekker kant van jou. En ik denk dat is de vlagstoker van jou binnen die toekenningsceremonie. En die skole wat so mildelik heel neem om die matrikulante uit te wys. Ek dink is remarkable and rewarding. And thank you for giving recognition to them. I think it led them in their school years on a high note. And they did it just because they have to do it. But then they get recognition for what they came through in achieving what they have achieved. So well done to that part of that award ceremony. Thank you. Members, I'm going to leave you around for questions now. I'm just going to ask, and I know I did a submission now, but I'm asking you not to do a submission, just to ask you a question. Member McKenzie, I'm going to start with you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start asking my question. But I have to say, Chairperson, when I saw my daughter didn't receive the top three in the Western Cape, I was very disappointed. But I must say, I'm very proud. I see out of the number of distinctions, there's 584 for the five distinctions, and she went five. So she's out of 584. Out of 50,000 students that wrote, she actually did well. I was a bit disappointed, but I'm feeling much better. I was expecting 7 or 8 years. So that's my submission. But coming back to the question, have we, and I'm going to start with a there's no slide number, so I'm just going to refer to the heading. There's no slide page number. So I'm going to refer to the Western Cape ECD performance, which is slide, let's call it slide number one. Have we done an in-depth study of the 4,000, and I know that somebody mentioned illness or sickness, but of the 4,000 students that didn't write, have we done an in-depth study to understand what was the reason behind the people that didn't write? Because they were in the trick for the whole year, I presume. They were registered in full time, so they were in the trick for the whole year. The 4,000 students that didn't write, I'm keen to understand what was the, has anyone done it in their studies? One can understand the reasons why they didn't write. And of the 4,000, because somebody also mentioned the 4,000, they're writing the supplementary exams in June. And what percentage of that 4,000, not the ones that failed, percentage of the 4,000 that didn't write actually write the June exams, and do they pass? And what percentage of them pass? Keen to know. Because some of them are lost to the system, and I'm keen to know how many of them are completely lost to the system. Those that didn't write the reasons, and those that didn't write the supplementary exam. Or do they go back the following year to the school? That would be my question there. Chair, on my second question on that page, if you look at the schools that have done consistently well over the last 5 years, 99 schools maintain 95% and above, 69 school 100% pass rate. The best practices, and one can only presume some of these obviously very good schools, etc., but the best practice, what those schools are doing right, how do we duplicate those for the schools that are not doing well? Last week we were on the garden route, and there were the schools in Tembalicha and Funfeld, the Hillcrest, and some schools, despite the circumstances, had excellent principals. I mean, you listen to those principals, you actually want to cry. You see the amount of effort they put in into making their schools a success despite the challenges. How do we, what training, some people are natural leaders, I mean that's just the reality, but how do we duplicate what they're doing alike, including in challenging communities, the equivalent of the Kailichas, the Hillcrest, the Gangalan communities, to empower the principals that are not doing well so that they can also do well, because some people just complain the whole day, I want new toilets, I want new this, I want new this. Some people, despite that, they're not having new toilets, actually clean the toilets themselves, like portions, and they actually do well. So how do we duplicate that behavioral change? It's very difficult because human behavior, how do we duplicate that? Chairperson, on the marking of the matric and I'm going to pull that slide number three, the marking of the exams. When we talk about the quality of the passes, that's good and well. How do we, because as you mentioned, markers mark against time, because the matric result must be done then. How do we quality check the marking of the papers? Is there a team that goes in and jams back to order this marking of the papers? Not the question, the actual marking. You see, the card is in the rush because you get 10 rand per paper mark, and I don't know how it works. But to ensure that the marking, because there's a small percentage of people who ask for their exams to be remarked so they can get a higher mark, and bursaries, but the majority, now, presumably 95% of them don't. So how do we check the quality of the marking to ensure that the actual result is the actual result and not just people rushed against time? I'm going to leave that. You want to go continue with other members first? Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, members, work with me time-wise, yeah? Member Allen?
Thank you so much to Member McKenzie. He asked, I think this with regard to the 5.6%, that the percentage that will actually arrive in June. But then if I can just check with regard to, of the 69 schools that passed were 100%, what amount of that would have learners under 30? I can just get an idea of that, as well as for the 99 schools. But I didn't see any indication regarding from grade 10 and 11 up until March if there was any learners that changed subjects. Are we tracking those learners as well? For example, if someone is doing pure maths and we are seeing that they aren't coping and they are shifting, are we tracking them as well in terms of what would the end result be in the tracking? Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to ask, actually, why did it go so horribly wrong for Lanesburg? Where did it go wrong? Are you leaving? No, sir. You're not leaving. Sorry, we'll close the doors for you. I'll be with you now. And then in terms of the learner transport, the vehicle inspection done before this academic year started for these learners who is using the learner transport? And were there any defects found, and what happens to that transport, and what is the contingency if that transport is taken out of the fleet? Member Kama?
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation and congratulate the class of 2019. Chair, I think the MEC, since the release of the results, has without fail attributed most of the challenges that we face in the department in the Western Cape to the immigration of learners, especially from the Eastern Cape and other provinces. And Chair, I want to interrogate this further so that I get an understanding. I think you'll recall even in our visit, I was trying to understand as to how does this affect the pass rate. Is it the issue of overcrowding because we don't have space, now it increases the teacher-to-learner ratio, or is it an issue of them not understanding the subjects that are taught when they arrive in the province? So I want to interrogate that, Chair, because if you look at the metric results, those that wrote, you would see that you have more or less about the same number. If you check the last 5 years, you have more or less about the same number of learners that wrote the matric. And if you compare that to provinces like Gauteng, which has the highest immigration, by the way, you would note that Gauteng continues to keep its spot of number one or number two. which is number two in the most recent part. Now I want to get really an understanding. Or is because the MEC complains about money not following these learners. Is it because the Western Cape is unfairly treated, because we see in Gauteng many people entering into Gauteng, but Gauteng continues to produce better labs? That's one question that I have. The second question, Chair, is on the placement of results. I want to check, how do we monitor the implementation of admission policies, in especially your former models in schools? Because you have a challenge of many complaints that you receive, and I must appreciate the assistance that is given by the department from time to time when these matters are raised before them. But I want to check, how do we ensure that these policies are properly implemented and there are no people that are discriminated against? Because in many cases, Chair, you find many learners meeting the requirements, but then in turn do not get. Like, there are cases specifically that we're dealing with where you find someone stays 500 meters from the school, someone excels in sports, someone has a sibling in that particular school, has all these requirements, but the person does not get the opportunity to be placed in that particular school. And in fact, you get other people from far away getting the opportunity to be placed. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm largely covered by you, Chairperson, in terms of the sentiments expressed. I'm not going to go into that, maybe towards the end. What I wanted to couple, I mean, I've got quite a few questions, but first starting with the matric results. Seven districts, I'm aware, have achieved very, very good pass rates. I think we must commend the heads of those districts and the department for really driving them in that direction. However, we still see that the Metro East district didn't really do too well. Could we possibly get an explanation as to why the schools in the Metro East district didn't really perform too well, and also what plan is in place to improve those results, possibly utilizing some of the strategies that were used in the other districts? I just wanted to get a sense if we could maybe transport the best practice that was used there. Then, largely, I also see that the bachelors, that there's been an improvement in terms of the bachelor passes, and we commend the department for that, because that really gives learners an opportunity to get into the working world, to study at higher institutions of learning. Now, I just wanted to get a sense as to, and if you don't have the data here, maybe it can be furnished to the committee, just if we can get a sense as to the spread between the quintiles. What percentage of that is from quintile 1 to 3 schools? What percentage is from the other kind of quintile schools? I just wanted to get a sense of that. Then also on the matric results, I'm covered on the Lanesburg thing. I just wanted to know, has there been, what have the consequences been? Because I must say, I don't want to repeat Member Boerter, but we visited that particular school last year as part of our oversight visit. Member McKenzie was with. And I must say, really, the principal, I don't want to bring anybody down, but the principal didn't really seem as if he was taking the schooling seriously at those learners. And then we go, he doesn't even raise things with the circuit manager, doesn't raise things with the physical. It's fine, then we come here and we make a noise, because, okay, politics plays its role sometimes, but we make a noise and we don't realize that sometimes it's the principals also. So I just wanted to know what mechanism is in place also to ensure that those incidents don't happen in the future, but to also just zone in on that school, because it's beyond the issue of exam script. That school has got many challenges. And it takes me, that actually takes me then to my next question, and I'm going to end there because I've largely been covered, is the issue of the declining results, of the decline in mathematics and science, in terms of particularly learners taking up these subjects.
Now, Lanesburg was one example. When we engage with the principal about whether, I mean, why are learners not taking, why not, it was a very nonchalant response, and we've been getting that a lot at schools. And we also find that circuit managers are not necessarily hard enough sort of ensuring that schools offer those subjects, that learners are encouraged to take. So what do we do? I mean, from the department side, what's the plan in place to push learners in that regard? Because you find also that schools, to increase the matric result, also they try to push for the easier subjects. And that's a problem. How do we basically mitigate against it? But also, what can we as the public reps do? Those of us who are in communities, what can we do to also encourage parents to ensure that learners actually do mathematics and science? Maybe we could say, yeah. So I'm going to end there for the matric results now. I'll ask the other questions after that. It's quite a bit too.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think the question that Member Said asked is on the pass rate on bachelor passes in the quintiles. But so my question is on that. I'm glad that the department has given that numbers, because I was always concerned about those numbers. But we can clearly see that in the quintile 1, 2, and 3, we are still struggling with the bachelor passes quite substantially. And I think the reason quintile 4 is also doing only 27% is because many of our schools, poor schools, is placed in quintile 4. We've experienced that. So 59% is quintile 5, but it's still alarming to see that in quintile 1 we're sitting with 24%, 26 to 28%. It's increased, but it's still worrying. If we can just get explanation onto how we're going to improve it. It's been improving, but it's I don't think it's satisfactory at this point in time. The other area I just want to talk about, and Mr. Mayor was talking, I think, about it, the ratios to keep it under 40. But those ratios are misleading, because this last week we saw classes of 50 and so on. So, you know, you get to the school, you get the presentation, tells you it's 1 to 38, and one after the SEP post is 1 to 35, but then you go to actual classes and you see, but here's, still 50, a class of 50. And the question that we ask, and this is the question, and I'm glad for the additional posts and all of that, but when is enough enough? Because we want to render, yes, a right to education, but we want to render quality education to our learners. And then you get these huge number of classes. The other thing that in the one is just the norms and standards is that norms and standards, how is that monitored? Because also we picked it up that some schools is not using it as they should. So who picks that up? Because they tend to blame the department for X, Y, Z, but they are not applying the norms and standards as they should. So can the department just give us a briefing on that? And Chair, I just the one thing that I just want to highlight, and I don't want to dwell on last week, but when we entered one school, you saw, and I'll give the name of the Hillcrest. When we entered the school, the staircase is used as a ablution facility, very bad. The drug packets is on the school, and we spoke about the access control that's very bad, and the principal is doing well under all those conditions. But the big thing for me as a quintile 4 school is never a quintile 4 school. Years back it was, so to say, a colored school, but if you see the migration of learners is now a Khoza speaking school mainly, and this guy now needs to. Yes, the department wants the results. They've got 84%, and they brought it up tremendously. But the challenges are so enormous. Big classes, hungry learners, because it's a no-paying school. But this is the big thing I want to say. They have many learners, so that's in Mossel Bay. They have many learners in the Ashla community. When it rains, 400 people don't pitch up because there's no transport, but there's a school needed there. And when there's industrial action, 600 learners don't pitch up for school. And we want these people to excel in the education, but it's difficult. And we must really salute those teachers and learners doing exceptionally well in the department. But I'm just saying, you know, all these added problems that they are facing, and we still expect results. So, Chair, I just wanted to bring that as an example of what other schools, and I'm not going to detail what other schools are facing, but I think the important thing, looking at all of that thing, I think the department is doing a good thing. And then the other thing is just, with the placements on learners, again, a good job. But, you know, people come to us and say, we refer them to the district office, you know, because that is the thing to do. So, some of them, it's just not responding to SMSs and stuff like that. And I'm glad that, you know, the enrollment of for the next year moves further. You know, you can't do it anymore, because that's a question I ask. But still we have that problem, and the online applications, you know, you try to do that and it's not working and so on. So we're still sitting with a large, huge amounts of problems, but from my heart, I want to thank the Minister of the HD for people doing good work under difficult circumstances. But this is the real facts that we see on the ground, and I would like them to address those. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a question on the maths pass rate that Member Said asked. And I'm just trying to understand also the number of learners that wrote exams. Because from 2015 to 2019, similarly with physical science, is maths getting tougher? Is science getting tougher? Or is our teachers getting less equipped? Are they getting more training? Is our learners? Because it's nice not to like maths. I mean, I wasn't maths often. I had maths and science. I passed them, actually. But are less people just not like it? I'm sure, you know, the one is to get to the real reason. It's nice to put in all figures and all the stats, but I'm getting to the base. The problem is grade 2 maths, grade 3 maths, grade 4 maths. Because we have to understand the problems to fix it when it gets to grade 12. Because the problem is grade 12. By the time we get to grade 12, 11, the guy don't like maths. He's not doing well. He's passing with 30%. Unlikely that it's going to go further. So how do we deal with a base problem? Grade 2, grade 3, grade 1, grade R, plus math compulsory, grade R level. How do we deal with it as a problem? So 15 years from now, whoever gets the credit is there, the MEC or the Director General, can get a credit 15 years from now. But that the base has been fixed at this point. I think that's my question on the math chapter. And just the last point, quick point. On the issue, and I've seen it in Mr. Splain last week as well, because it was Alpine for a few days, and the issue of peeing on the staircases, that cannot be the department's problem, man. Fix it at home. Pee at your house if you need me. And I'm saying if you go to school toilet, but those are issues, again, behavioral issues, that kids don't mind peeing on the staircase. It's something that's not responsibility of the teacher, man. You must speak to your parents.
Also last week on our oversight visit in Nine Love is an organization called
Kim.
They do wonders with the schools in that area. Mm-hmm. And I'm latching onto what Mr. Christian I think said about the norms and standards, and some schools don't know how they can use this money or what they need to use it for. And I think, you know, in Minister, speak to the collaboration schools and what results were in terms of collaboration schools, but also how does the department encourage, there's a school, I think it's Hillcrest, you must help me, it's Hillcrest Secondary School. It's right in the middle of an industrial area. But there's not also out-of-the-box thinking of how industry can assist the school with their needs. And how does the department encourage collaboration with industry, perhaps to take them by the hand and be able to assist? Then I want to speak to the candidates for district, that page in 2019, and I'm specifically looking at the West Coast. That's 5%. Now that 5% in numbers, what was it? And in terms of that, cohort, that group that started grade 1 in 2007, what was those numbers in comparison to then who wrote matric? Thanks, and Minister HLV, that is our round of questions. Members, if you need to follow up, you must just indicate.
Okay, thank you, Officers, and then I'll give the difficult ones to the rest. Just for the record, I mean, if there's any credit to be had in 15 years' time, it goes to the NEC. If it doesn't work, then it goes to the HLV. Okay, first of all, thank you for your comments on the awards. I also agree, it's not always easy to decide who's going to get them, and it's always, it is a joker. Last year also, we had some incredible candidates, and what they go through and still manage to pass and do well very often. Honourable McKenzie, yeah, don't worry about your daughters. Mine also wrote 2 years ago, and they didn't get in the top 3 hours, so I was also a bit disappointed. But I mean, they contributed 11 distinctions to the province's total, so I was happy with it. Okay, then, have we done in-depth study? If my HOD can answer that, but I doubt we've had time to do an in-depth study on that, but she can look. Schools that have done consistently well, we are always looking to duplicate. You know, we have what Dr. Beers always calls the communities of practice, where we try and share between schools, but my HOD can also give more info on that, as well as the marking of exams. But I do know that we do check. We have moderation panels, and that issue with Langsberg was one of those examples. I mean, that we called everyone in to come and do those papers. Including the moderating team. So that's there to ensure that we don't have people rushing. But I also want to know how some people can suddenly get extra marks when they do a remark. I'd also like an answer to that. The 69% how many are under 30, I'll leave that one for the department officials. And tracking subjects, changing computer maps. I'm sure we have that data. Langsberg, my HSD will definitely answer. Learner transport as well, again, will answer. Right, so Honourable Connor, I attributed most of the challenges to in-migration. It's not the in-migration as such, it's the issues that accompany it and the lack of funding, as you also did mention later. Because for the last 5 years we've had, I think, about 170,000 extra people coming into the province, that money doesn't follow. So the Eastern Cape, most of the time, that is where most of them come from. They sit with the money in their province, in their budget. There's no incentive for them to actually reduce their budget. And very often they are oversupplied with teachers for the number of learners they have. So all those issues are eating into the money that's allocated to the province. And we have taken it up with National Treasury on many occasions. We've taken it up with our provincial treasury on many occasions. And their responses would have been they need to cushion other provinces, but they don't seem to worry about cushioning that. So we have to provide the services. But we aren't cushions, but provinces that are losing people are being cushioned from, so it just doesn't make much sense. They're also using outdated data, and the quintile system, as I've said many times, is not a good system. It's a national policy. We don't agree with it. I've been challenging it since I was appointed. The DVE did an investigation, and they said the only other option is to have fee schools versus no fee schools, and there isn't enough. That was their response when I did raise it many years ago. So the point is, I have the ability to change a quintile on appeal, which I sometimes do, but I cannot do it on a wholesale basis because there simply isn't funding. So that's my main issue with the in-migration. When you're getting 23,000 extra people coming into the province every single year, where do we put them? And we make our plans for where we're going to build schools and add on classrooms and appoint teachers, and then every year something comes along that changes that. So more people come along, that's already a huge strain on the budget because we have to actually plan ahead almost for them, and we can't do that because we just aren't able. The other issue that I have also blamed is the national wage negotiations, where they negotiate the wage packages for our staff and teachers, but they don't give us money. So they know what we can afford, we tell them. But then they go always, every single time, they negotiate above what we have in our budget. And then we have to go and find somewhere like 165 million rand sort of just overnight. So what do? We take our money away from schools and infrastructure and whatever. So those are my issues. Having said that, there are people who come here. A lot of people are coming here in grade 10. And they do come with backlogs in education because, unfortunately, in the Eastern Cape, the system is not as good as ours, despite the fact that they supposedly went up 5% a year. That is interesting in itself when you look at the actual figures. But they do, and the figures show about 50% of them fail matric. And the other part is about a lower rate than the rest of people who've been in the system the whole time. So that's what I mean by that. The other problem we've discovered only very recently is a lot of the people coming here are special needs learners, because we are very good at our special needs education. And we've only recently discovered that in the equitable share formula, National Treasury does not count special needs learners for allocation of funding, which is absolutely outrageous because obviously they are, first of all, individuals, and second of all, they've got special needs which actually cost more. So those are the issues. So in a sense, we are unfairly treated. Yes, you're right, Gauteng does have also huge immigration. But my biggest issue across the whole system is we do not have accurate data across the whole country. We really don't. And there have been some attempts to change that, but I think some schools are even, I even heard that a school stopped staff this April going into this. I mean, that already tells us what possible basis can they do that. So I really think, you know, we've can't make financial decisions without accurate data, and I think that needs to be something that must improve in the system. Gauteng doesn't actually continue to produce better results. They were number one, they're the only province that dropped last year, the only one in the entire country. And actually, when you look at the figures for retention, the Western Cape, we lose 35.6% from from 2017, grade 10, to 2019, who actually wrote matric, we lost 35.6% of our learners. Gauteng lost 50.4%. That's higher education. Simple as that. Do you want us to kick out our learners who aren't going to pass? Because let us know then. Well, can you imagine if we did that? It's not what we stand for, it's not what we want, it's not what we're going to do. We want as many people as possible to stay in the system and write it. Free State, on the other hand, 57.4% of its cost disappeared from grade 10 to 11. So obviously if you reduce all the weaker learners, take them out of the system, they don't include them in the pass rate, then they're going to do better. So if that's how you want them to get to number one, then we can do that too. That's not what we want to do at this point. It's not our policy, it's not our philosophy. So I'm very happy to defend the so-called drop in the rankings, because there have been attempts at CBE to do a basket of criteria, where they do the rankings according to pass percentage, plus retention rate, plus bachelor's passes, plus maths and science passes. And every single time they've done it, the Western Cape is number one, which is probably why they haven't published it. It was published in the parliamentary question, only after one of my colleagues asked it. It's not regarded as the official pass rate. And you ask how we're going to change the system, that's how we're going to change the system. How are we going to get more people taking maths and science? By stopping this absolute obsession with lead tables and waiting to see who's number one, because that leads to people discouraging learners from taking subjects that are going to bring them up. That's exactly right. So I don't agree. I mean, Gauteng is doing well, but they're not doing as well as they often make out. So then, how do we monitor admission policies? Every single person has the right of appeal, various rights, usually to the school, sometimes to the district, and then ultimately to me. And when people come with these kind of issues, I do look at them, and I'm asking very difficult questions of schools. If I've got one right now that I'm busy with. They said, no, the school is full, they can go there. I said, well, how did the school get full? Because the woman says her neighbors actually got accepted and her child. So I'm asking for reasons to other school. How did those children get accepted, and why was this now full suddenly for this other child who lives right next door? So I do that whenever I possibly can. So that's my monitoring role. We cannot go into every single admission policy because you don't always know either whether they apply them the same. I have had some discussions with some ex-Model C schools, one in particular that was very upset when I did grant an appeal, and they have started to change those policies as a result of that. So we're having ongoing discussions. We've got a diversity strategy now, which I have asked to be developed, which has been developed, and we are, you know, we've got all those angles, and people must use those. If schools say we're full, I accept every school can only take a certain number, but they need to explain how they got to that number, on what basis were those children taken. Then, 7 districts. Actually, Metro East did quite well. I mean, you can see they're one of the biggest numbers, and even though they went over 80, they did increase from last year, and then their bachelor's passes went up very nice. So I'm actually quite happy with them, despite the 80%, but they obviously are aiming for 80% next year, and we will assist where we can. But they certainly have shown an improvement from last year, and HFD, or Mr. Mayor, maybe can give some more info on the strategies. Consequences, I'm very happy you asked that question. Because you're right, if there's no good principle, the school doesn't work, it's basically hard. And we've had a lot of issues with the so-called IQMS, which is meant to be performance management, which is really a joke. People in the system call it, I am quietly manipulating schools, literally, because people do peer reviews of each other, they don't want to upset their colleagues, and they don't do an honest assessment. And a lot of that has got to do with why we're bringing in the School Evaluation Authority now, which is now commencing. And they will go and do an assessment of the school, and they will see schools like the Honourable Mackenzie mentioned, where people are doing incredible work despite very difficult circumstances. And then we can use those examples to show them. But it will also show our people who aren't doing work. And then we will see what they need to do to fix it, and what if we need to assist them, and what we need to do to assist. Also, the IQMS system has been changed now to QMS, which is better because the principal will be more directly responsible for their management of their staff and to make sure that, you know, then they will be held more directly accountable. So a combination of those, I think, is good. We also do make my HID gets taken to court regularly for appointing principals who were not necessarily the number one candidate of the governing body because he didn't believe the number one candidate was there. And then there's all kinds of drama about that, and schools sometimes stop people from actually going in. We've had a principal who was kept out of school the entire year last year because there were some people on the SDP who were refusing to allow him in, literally. Now, you know, when you've got members of the community stopping us from trying to pursue the excellence, that's also difficult for us. Agree about the easier subjects, that's why they push for easier subjects, so they can be, because they want us to be number one also, so let's stop obsessing about number one on the lead table. That's on. Then, what can public refs do? Thank you for asking that also, because I think one thing that public refs can do is if we can try and, first of all, encourage community members to understand that if there's problems in this school, it's not because the department is sitting here trying to work out how to make life more difficult. We aren't. If there are issues, bring them to us, and if we can sort them out, we will sort them out. But if we have classes that are overfilled because we can't afford more teachers, then we can't afford more teachers. And if you can assist us in helping schools and communities understand that, and try and work out strategies how to deal with that, because that is going to be the reality over the next few years at least. I can see it's not going to be. That will help. Issues like peeing on the toilet, well, I mean, that is a behavioural issue. And it shouldn't be for schools to have to deal with that. Obviously, in, you know, discipline in school is an issue. But we are also doing transformative performance strategy, which is a change in values and mindset, and we're hoping that those kinds of things will also assist in the school context. But yeah, where do the children get it from? Where do they see it? So we really need to work with communities also to, we're sitting now in a situation where the school wants something, we're now saying we're going to deliver it, no, they don't want it. Because it's not exactly how they want it. We can't work like that. And the other problem is also this ongoing vandalization of school properties. Because we are in, whether we're in difficult situations or not, it's simply unacceptable to allow people to steal pieces of fence one after the other and to go solve a tick. Well, people see them right opposite the school and don't do anything at all. And we cannot and will not keep on replacing things that get stolen as soon as we fix it and broken and vandalized. We aren't able to anyway because we haven't got the money. And it's also not fair on other people who don't resort to that, who've been waiting for a very long time for resources. So that is where public groups really can assist. Try and help us engage communities surrounding schools and let them realize that the school is a community asset also for everybody. And how we can work together better to protect, because our resources are very, very, very stretched. Then, Quintal systems, not a true reflection of, we know that, but it was actually going down, so I'm very pleased that it improved this in the last year, because we have been giving that attention. Ratios are misleading, because very often principals don't teach, and the ratios we calculate are on the total teacher cohort. We know that, we actually do go on the ground, believe it or not, and we are very aware of all these issues. We simply aren't able to do anything else. And we're managing it as best we can, as the HID said earlier regarding the teachers. We aren't going to be governed by protests and running to the media. We will wait until the 10 days. We will see which schools the ones with the most need, and we will allocate according to those. When is enough enough? This is a very good question. And I'd love to have a discussion on that issue. What do I say if I say, sorry, our schools are not full, we are not going to take anybody else? Tell me what happened. You guys will all lambaste me in the media. Equal Education will take me to court. And various other people say, well, I mean, the reality of these systems is that I personally have a constitutional obligation to put every child in school. And it doesn't seem to take into account whether I have the money or not, because I don't. And I agree with you. I mean, I say it's full, and every year we get another 22,000 people coming, so what must I do? Give me suggestions, I would love to have, because really we are running out of options. And it's not the answer just to keep pushing more and more people into every school, and it's not the answer to keep on saying, every school must take more and squash. It's taking its toll on our teachers, but there really isn't any other choice. So what do we do? and I really would love to hear it. Then, well, the standards, I love that question too. I also keep asking that question, and I've been asking finance for a while now to make sure that they have better oversight mechanisms as to what happens with that. I understand there are some, I'm not sure whether they're adequate, but there, that is a concern, and I actually want to suggest that the department be invited back here to do a presentation on what Norton standards get paid for and what they are supposed to be spent on, Mr. Mayor. Because it is a concern, and I do think that some schools are not doing what they should with that money. Then, yeah, and I also love the way they blame the department. They're actually part of the department. They don't seem to understand that. Then, yeah, drug packets, I mean, I know it's an issue, but access control actually is a management issue. And that's also something where perhaps communities can assist with that. I've been to one school in a gang-stricken community. It's an incredibly well-run school. And that principal will not let anyone into the school other than the children. The parents have to stay at the gate and then the children come in because they don't know who the gangsters are and who's fighting with who at any particular time. And, you know, that's the kind of decisions you have to make. So access control can be managed better, especially when there are a lot of different entrances to school premises. It can become difficult. Transport, yeah, well, we also know we cannot simply carry every single child to school and make it there. It's just not possible. I actually asked last year whether we could take the transport policy down to 4 kilometres at least for primary school. That was going to cost 65 million. I mean, it's just 1 kilometre. So we do really try our best to make sure that those who are desperately needing it the most do get it. And there are sometimes delays, but generally I think there are mostly resolved. I agree with you too that we have all these problems and these little big results, and the worst part is that we expect the education department to deal with all these issues, and Online applications are actually an option. It is not compulsory. There was the option of also of manual, and it will stay this year, right? So please tell people if they get told by the school that they have to do online, they do not. Districts, I also had a lot of complaints that the district aren't responding, Mr. Mayor, when people go there, and then they can't take my office, and you're losing your district. Pass rates and maths, I agree. Pass rates and maths is problematic for a number of reasons, but for one of them is we simply aren't getting enough maths teachers. We are really aren't. I've actually been introduced to a new program online that sounds very exciting, and we're going to have a meeting shortly with the people who have developed it. They've done it in other provinces, much to my and seemingly have had good results. If that is so, we can certainly look at that because it deals with remediation of aspects where people have backlogs and how they can fix them. And we could also then maybe offer it to people. Sometimes also in schools there aren't enough people to take math, so there are only a handful of people. It doesn't justify a full-time teacher first. And so then they're also being prejudiced in a sense because they can't take math. So this might be first for that. Kilt, we know about Kilt, that's fantastic. I wish more people would do that. Collaboration schools, performance was generally good. There were one or two exceptions, but generally it was good. And the one where we had the biggest concern is when there's been political interference in school, which is a big worry. And how do we encourage people? We always encourage people. That's why we have so many partnerships. We are very open to partnerships. And if people in that area maybe would like to take it up as well, perhaps constituency heads or community leaders, that would also be very useful. Maybe go and look at Kilt, see what they're doing, and see if you can replicate that. Bonnievale School is a classic example, also excellent working together of communities. Okay, thank you. If I can hand over to my HME.
Chair, I'm going to try not to respond to all of the items that the Minister's covered. They are very extensive and wide-ranging comments. Just perhaps if I can say that there's always a bit of a concern for me in the NEC results. If we don't understand that the system is like a living thing, and therefore 2% up or 2% down in that range is okay. It's not suddenly a problem if Gauteng come down 0.5% or whatever. I mean, they're large systems and cohorts change from year to year, and it's further impacted by Umelusi's adjustment decisions, etc. The large trends are the concerns. The issues that go up, the jumps 5%+, for example, that's difficult in a large system to justify. So, The gradual adjustments that are made in our system I'm happy about, particularly given, as you correctly said, the challenges that we face, the the issues that, that actually contribute to working against us getting better and better results, and the ability of the system to overcome it. And I say to the system, and not the department, because the performance that we achieve is a combination of teachers and learners' attitudes. And where we will make the difference is learner attitudes, and that's where the transformative performance strategy comes in. If you speak, for example, about the reality of some social ills, the discipline issues, the peeing on toilets, on staircases, the smoking of drugs, the gangsters, and the hiding of pangas on the school grounds so that they can fight when gangs attack gangs, that's reality on our school spaces. Now, we have to get that change and give our kids hope again. So the whole issue is about that. One of the key factors in doing that is putting greater accountability back on the principal of the school. Not the department, not the district, the principal of the school. Now, therein lies a huge rub, because we can only do that if we, over time, send out the message that we want the best quality principals. And the principals aren't nominated through the democratic process of governing bodies for the wrong reasons, and that they really try to find the best person to lead the school. And the law, as you know, says, and the regulations say, governing bodies must nominate three people, and the HOD's got the right to choose any of those three people. And so I'm happy to be challenged when I choose the number two for sound reasons, whether it is gender equity, whether it is qualifications, whether it is new input into a school. Those are sound reasons, and I don't mind being challenged, but we've got to say more, that it's okay to try to get the best principal in place. And you're quite right, everywhere where you've got a successful school, particularly a successful school in the challenged community, you've got great leadership, not only principal, because that principal must also garner the leadership of the school, the outreach to the community, the protection of the site. I mean, Lavender Hill and other places, they're wonderful examples of that. And it does bring me also to the question of how do we share best practice across schools. That's an important point. But there's one constant, and that's the district. So in a South African context where you've got districts, which is not common across the world, those districts have to see where the best things happen and share it with other schools. Help train and help empower people to be able to do that. That's what the WCD is trying to do in uplifting the standard. It also is part of what happens when we try to minimize the so-called underperforming schools. Now, underperforming schools often yo-yo. They go up and down. Why? Because sometimes there's gatekeeping, and then a bunch of kids that didn't pass get progressed into it. And in this province, the number of progress learners, right, and it pulls the results down. We've got to understand that alive animal in the sense that's in this place. So just to say, we do a lot of engagements. I can't say we're doing an in-depth study on the 4,000 that didn't write. It's fairly constant year in and year out. More than 2,500 of those are medical cases, broken legs, illnesses, missed one paper, or some of that nature. So it's not all dropouts. It's guys that haven't completed the exam. In there is also the progress learners, which have a choice of writing part of the exam. In this province, it's minimal. Most of them write the full examination. In other provinces, ministers made reference to it, but that skews the resultant picture often. So we track that a little bit. We don't have data on how many of them have directly written. What I can tell you is that in the supplementary exam, the pass rate is dismal. And the fact that DBE, against our recommendation, has opted across the nation to move the supplementary exam to June as opposed to March, in my view, will make it even more difficult, because it is a longer time since the kids are out of school before they write the supplementary. Their chances of being ready for the June exam is then minimized. And I know that DBE speaks of the second chance matric, which is an attempt to help learners who are already out of school. We haven't even got enough money and resources to help kids that are in school. How can we let real justice happen to those kids that are out of school, not full-time in school anymore, and attend some courses from time to time? It's a difficult issue. Then I want to speak about the quality of marking. This province is lauded for the quality of marking, and because of the large number of markers across the nation, it's difficult to say that the quality of marking is equivalent or equitable across the place. In our case, every single script, 10% of it as a minimum is remarked. In other words, moderated. 10%. If a senior marker,
who remarks some other marker scripts finds anomaly in it, it gets given back. If there is a trend of challenge, then they have to remark the whole back of the markers. If there is a further challenge, then that after a further training, that marker is relieved of his or her function. It's a strict engagement. Furthermore, as you know, we're also the only province that has in the 11 gateway subjects pre-testing, competency-based assessments that markers have to write and attain before they are able to mark the trends. So there's a whole host of issues there. I want to also say that the remarks had very little impact generally as a system. There are exceptions, and Minister says she wants to know why that is so. It's because exams mark is not a, it's not a scientific engagement. There's interpretation, there's judgment of a marker. And it is also true that sometimes it's a tough period of heavy marking, concentrated, etc. It is possible that an error slips through, or that a judgment on a particular paragraph or in the essay, for example, often the written scripts is more so, and that is why you have that. In the event that suddenly a candidate's marks have dropped, theoretically by 2 symbols, if there's a big drop in mark, they can have a remark. There are also a number of other reasons for that, but there is certainly high quality checking of marking aspects. I just want to say about mathematics. There's been quite a bit of conversation about mathematics. It's a difficult educational conversation. There's an emotive one, there's an ideological one, and there's an educational part to that conference. I often say that if you told me I had to take music, it would be a disaster. But if we think every child can do mathematics, we think that can happen. All kids don't have the skills to do mathematics. We understand the need for a basic mathematics, but when it comes to specialist maths later on, and it's been recognized, I think, because, for example, the requirement of mathematics into all courses at university has been dropped. It's only mathematics for particular courses such as the sciences and others where it is important. However, having said that, we're not satisfied that all learners who are capable of doing mathematics are doing it at the moment. Hence, our target of upping that to about 40% at least of learners, and eventually up to 60%. It's not there yet. And it is true that Tina can tell you that every year parents and candidates ask to drop to maths lit because they've tried it and then they struggle at the end and they see they're going to fail it with 10 or 15%. Now, it's also an injustice to a child to expect them to then continue if they really struggle with it. You also ask us what are our plans in this regard. Our plans is our math strategy, and a lot of that has got to do exactly, remember Mackenzie, with a 12 to 15 year strategy. You've got to get foundation phase right. You can't get it right elsewhere. This is linked also, remember Karma, to the in-migration challenges that we face. I mean, this year we have more than 14.5 candidates coming into the province, 14,500 from the Eastern Cape only. It's spread across all provinces, a few hundred, including outside the borders of South Africa, also foreign learners, but it's by far the majority. Now, those learners don't come into our system for 12 years. Some do, but the majority of them come either in high school or grade 10, and there are some that even come later because of the overall expectation of maturity. Now, those learners don't have that foundational learning, and therefore the opportunity for the success, whilst the hope is there, is the contributing factor to some of the challenges that we face. Our teachers, I think, are doing fantastic work in trying to get them up to speed. It's one of the reasons why we continue with our so-called high school intervention program, so that we offer, and this is part of the plan that we have, we offer targeted interventions by learner, not just by school, looking at the grade 10, 11, and 12 results. Targeted intervention in subject areas where those learners are challenging. So the data per question and the data across schools gives us an indication of where to do that. And so throughout the year, not just as a run-up to the examination, we have programs in the districts which is identified in which learners will have the best effort. I will also say that our support of schools these days is on 2 levels. One is trying to get learners that are on borderline cases to pass. The other one is getting kids that are performing well in the middle range into bachelors, and then there's a little effort in upping the distinction rates, because there are many kids who just miss out on those distinction rates. And so there certainly is a plan in that space. I also just want to say that there was a question, Member Allen, on the public schools. There are none under 30% of those public schools. None under 30% of those 100% passes in public schools. There are, because there are also independent schools who write their examination, but sometimes in the stats, it's not in the 69, but sometimes in the stats there are some of them that are small independent schools under 30 learners. But in the public schools, they are all above. Let's do Lanesburg. Lanesburg is a sad state of affairs. You raised the issue about the principal and the principal's approach. The principal also retired at the end of last year. Unfortunately, the challenge came in the management space at the school, where the scripts were on the particular day of the writing of that script. There's no media here, am I right? Any media? No media? No media. And I know this is normally an open meeting, but I raised the question because you also don't want to prejudge people when disciplinary processes are still in place, and that's why I'm cautious about that. The issue happened on the particular day the principal had to go to the district office because pre-moderation of the rest of the grades was happening. So the deputy principal, who is trained, was in charge of the examination, and at the end of the exam, which was an afternoon exam, secured the scripts in the secure container and locked it in a particular drawer. Normally the principal had that function, and it was the top drawer of a particular secure environment. This guy put it in the second drawer. The next day, when the scripts were collected, the top drawer was cleaned out, and this bag in the second drawer was then not, because the principal wasn't the way he thought that he had put it in the same space. And that is why it did not come through. So it was an unfortunate situation. It should not have happened. And all along the line in the check processes, there will be disciplinary, you asked about consequences, there will be disciplinary cases. We immediately, when we discovered and found that challenge, we looked at every possibility where it could happen, from my experience of where scripts could get lost. It was my belief that that was where we would find it. They had said no, there wasn't. We then sent people again to go take a look, and they were discovered. We brought in a team that marked it at night time, a team of senior markers. We brought in moderators that marked it overnight, and the next morning the results were able to be released. So it is an unfortunate space. Of course, there are always learners and emotions that impact in that space. It is not a position we would like to be in. The other aspect around things we've been was concerned that the learners would not get into universities. That was public space. We did a huge amount of work. We contacted every university. We clarified it with the registrars of courses. We're not supposed to. We're supposed to work through universities of Africa, which we did. The data was corrected and sent through the next day to universities prior to the date that they said that they would do the assessments. And so there are learners who have been admitted. There are learners who have also not been admitted to certain programs, degree or a diploma, but not because of the result, because they did not meet the cutoff or did not meet that space. So that's Lanesburg. The principal has retired in the last year, and is consequently also not there anymore. I'm going to just ask Nesleen to make a comment about the LTS vehicle inspection chair, and maybe she must do so now quickly. Speak to the whole process of regular inspections.
Okay, so most of the transport vehicles are through contract. Some of them are devolved routes where the schools own the vehicles, and so they. But all of the vehicles, be it contract or school owned, there are officials in the district. So when an advert goes out and a contract is awarded for a transport route. There is evidence of the vehicle that will be used, its registration number, and And so there are officials, transport officials in each district, which do routine checks, and they have a plan for each quarter and go around and do inspections of vehicles to ensure that people are infected. Because what we know happens sometimes is when they're doing the contract and putting in a quote, they send pictures of beautiful new vehicles, and then when they transport the learners, they don't. So particularly when there are new contracts, I mean, there is intense of, in a period in the first few months, there's intense of inspections just to make sure. And also, there is repeated incidents with some people, so with some contractors, so those are monitored more closely. And then we've also developed a monitoring tool with principals. So principals also assist in this process when learners are dropped off. They do inspections and just have a list with the vehicle registration so they can also check the condition of the vehicle. I mean, obviously it doesn't happen every morning, but they can do it unexpectedly, and so they check the condition of the vehicle, the registration, and just make sure that everything is in order. And then we also encourage the public, especially with bad driving conditions of vehicles, with school learners, sometimes private, I mean, I've dealt with many queries with private transporters, but we still encourage it because it's our learners, and we then try to find a school what's, you know, the real problem. So yeah, there's a comprehensive routine check procedure.
I think we'll leave it at that. We covered that a little bit, but Ellen, can you just speak to the North Stands monitoring?
Thank you, Mr. Chief and Chairperson. There are very, very strict rules in terms of how the norms and standards are to be spent at the school, for example. For example, 25% of the norms and standards must be used for maintenance of the school. So of a big school with a budget of around 1.6 million, we're talking about almost 400,000 rand. That is set aside specifically for the use of the maintenance of the school. Now we know that schools will try and find ways of not actually doing so. But what we do have is something called a 043 form that every school has to complete on a quarterly basis, and that is submitted through to the district office. The district office has what we call compliance officers who actually have to check whether what the school had budgeted for and whether it is in line with the spend that the school is supposed to follow as per the circular that we issue every year. Unfortunately, it happens in some of our schools where the municipal count is exorbitant. Particularly some of our schools in the metro area, the cost of the metros for the services to the city, for example, in some cases takes up more than 50% of a school's budget. And that is just for water and electricity to the school premises. We do encourage our schools to still participate in the program to use grey water for pollution facilities, etc. We are now also in the process of looking at more on the greening of our schools, a project program that we're wanting to introduce to look at the use of solar energy within schools to reduce the kind of capital cost around electricity and so on. But that is what we are trying to do, and also the 043 that schools need to complete that is a measure of how the budget is actually being spent at a particular school. At the end of every financial period, schools must submit a financially audited statement through to the district office, which is then scrutinized. It must be by an approved auditor from the minister's side, and they submit that, and then we check to see whether they've actually spent in terms of that. But as I said, there are other mitigating factors which makes it sometimes very difficult. But we are prepared to come, as the Minister has requested, to do a full presentation on the exact breakdown of those costs as well.
Okay, just finally, one question that you had asked about the percentages on that graph. That's an indication of the contribution of a particular district to the whole pass rate. So you'll see, for example, the smallest, it's an indication of the size of the district. The smallest contribution is Uffenberg, 4%, West Coast has 5% of all the drinks, the dry drinks.
Okay.
Actually, I just need to make a point that my presentation is in black and white with two slides on one. It's for cost saving reasons, I'm noting on.
Okay. So, Mercedes, I noted you for a follow-up, and then you were Karma. I just want to allude you to is 20 past 11. So no submission, just the follow-up.
Yeah, got quite a few follow-ups. Not going to be submitted.
We haven't even got to the questions around the other two presentations.
Yeah, no, those
okay.
are more about the other, yeah.
Okay.
I don't have really a follow-up for this.
Oh, you want to go to the
yeah,
other
two? I
want to go,
sorry.
Okay, then I'll start
with
me, McKinsey, and
okay.
then
we'll
go.
No, that's
down.
Fine.
If it's okay. Okay?
Thank you, Chair.
I'm just going to read two questions.
Yeah.
No submission. Just a question on the land transport, because we were in Tettenberg Bay last week as well, and the principal indicated that the contractor was from Mpumalanga, and they were only informed of the contractor in December, so there was an opportunity for the contractor to even check the route. So the first time we saw the problem. I'm just trying to understand how widespread is that problem. Well, the contractor is only appointed in December, and aside from other schools in the area, they had a similar problem. And so the first 2 weeks for the contractors driving the route, they first familiarized themselves with the route before they could actually pick up. It's just practical what they told us in the conversation. Yeah. So that's on the transport presentation. And then on the unplaced learners, placed learners, Chair, when we visited Timbalicha School last week, and there was 45 learners in the class, just as a general point, and at most other schools where there was learners, more learners in the class, how do you allocate the physical infrastructure? Because the learners in the class were way too few. I think there were 20 desks in the class with 45 learners, so the learners were sitting on the floor. So how do you allocate in other situations, because that's not the only school, I presume that many other schools have more learners in the class than desks, how do you allocate the physical infrastructure to the learners in the
course. Thank you, Chair. On learner transport, regarding, I understand the budgetary constraints with regard to the motivations that would be coming from various districts or schools, but what percentage of applications will be declined? If the reasoning for the question would be to say there's 100 schools, so that to get an understanding of how many schools feel that they would need transport for their learners. Also on the unplaced learners, someone giving a presentation mentioned 109 mobile classes. Is there an expiration date on a mobile class, or is, because that would be seen as a temporary measure, yes? But then it's there forever. Do we have something along those lines?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a follow-up, Chair, in the question that I read earlier around matric results and the influence. And interesting enough, Chair, we speak of...
No submission?
No, I wanted to... sorry about that. Yes, Chair, I'm saying... You know, if you look at 2015, for example, the performance of the province, we have 63,000 students that wrote matric, and we had a very good pass rate that year of 84%, producing 45,000. So I presume the challenge of influx is not something that started the year after that. It has always been there. Now, I want to understand, how do we really place the influx as a reason for us to drop in whatever way, whether SG is a large decrease or not, but how do we really place the issue of the influx to that, understanding that other schools, as everyone is saying, perform under very difficult conditions, but they still produce a better result than.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick follow-up before I get into it on the matric results issue. We spoke about the learner safety and the value system. So I think what I wanted to get a sense of, I mean, to what extent is life orientation? I see we went to a presentation on Friday on the life orientation and the sexuality issue. To what extent are we, is the department going to be strengthening the teaching of life orientation, the quality of teaching in life orientation? Because I think that can speak to the value system issue and also speak to the safety of the schools as one. And this has been brought to my attention. I mean, I wanted to get a sense. There's a school in the crossroads, the primary school, Koyakanya Primary School, where there was alleged sexual abuse by a teacher and a secretary at a farewell function. Matter was brought to the department. We just wanted to get a sense, and I think I'll probably write as well, just to get what steps have been taken. I mean, and that's an example. To investigate. I think also just the turnaround time in terms of the investigations when issues of sexual misconduct are taking place and where learners are affected, because that kind of thing does impact basically in that regard. What I wanted to get a sense is starting with regards to, there was a question raised by Member Kama in terms of the placement of learners, particularly in some of the quintile 4 and 5 schools, and the inconsistency there of the admission criteria. Is it possible that the department can probably do an investigation into those cases which were brought to the department's attention? Because I myself have brought cases to the department's attention. If an investigation can happen, and maybe we could just get feedback on the results of that. Right? That's number one. Then also there are cases, I wanted to know this, there's cases of grade 8 and 11 learners. Masibambani Secondary School in Kraaifontein is one example where learners are refused entry because they failed certain grades. I just wanted to get clarity on that. Also, the average class size, what right now, given the fact that you want to accommodate these learners that are now unplaced, what do you envisage to be the average class size of quintile 1 to 3 schools and the average class size of the Model C schools? Oh, no, let me not say they are no longer Model C schools. They are called former Model C schools. That means they are the former Model C schools. Is there a possible plan in place where not, I mean, to see whether we could possibly increase the size or the ratio by maybe 2 or 3 more learners in these schools to accommodate learners that are going to ensure that there's going to be many learners in the other quintile 1 to 3 schools? Then
can I
can I submit these questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just the question, a transport costs exorbitant and rising every year. When does the department look at maybe getting mobile classrooms to start a school, something like that, because your cost is rising, and when you have a significant number of pupils coming from one area, when do you start looking at maybe erecting a new school? If you can just give me, because I made Asla as an example, 600 or 800 pupils. Half of the school comes from one area, and it places a big burden on that school. The second question is just that the 5 or more kilometers radius. How many cases do you approve when a learner is grade 1 or dangerous routes? And that is brought to your attention. When do you deviate, and how many cases of that do you get, and how many do you approve? Thank you, Chair.
Just in terms of our guests in the committee room, I got an invitation from Mr. Gabriel to ask the question. Is there anybody else that wanted to ask the question? The second presentation in front of you, and what the department did. Anybody else? No. It's just Mr. Gabriel. Alright, Minister, HOD, I'm going to ask you to respond, and I'm also going to ask, in terms of the unplaced learners, I did not hear you talk to the catch-up program pertaining to these learners that are placed late into classrooms, if you can speak to that.
I'll be brief this one. Yeah, learner transport, I'll let Leslie answer that. But actually, school started on the 15th of January, so they had 15 days from the end of December to actually go and do that route. So I would like to know also what happened there. Allocate physical resources, let's see here. Budget. I don't think we can say that there's a particular percentage of applications that will be declined. There's a decision by the bus committee that considers all the considerations and things that are put forward, and then there's appeal rights to myself. So we consider each application on its own merits. Obviously, budget issues are, do come into it, but we do look at every individual situation. The same with the issues of safety. I don't have figures. We can get them if you want to on how many were overturned or compliant. There have been a few based on issues of safety. My HOD will answer Honourable Conway's question. Safety, LO is being strengthened. In fact, just last week there was a special event to recognise and acknowledge LO teachers, so we are putting a lot of emphasis on it. Sexual misconduct, I would also want to know about that. We take a very hard line against that, and maybe we might need more info from you afterwards, perhaps in a more confidential setting. Quintals, I don't know if we can say that there's an inconsistent application of policies, but as I said, in the appeal process, they have the right for me to appeal, and then we can look at that if there are. But if there are inconsistencies, then you are welcome to bring them to us. I'm not sure if the department has issues specifically from Honourable Side that I'm not aware of, but we will certainly look into it, and if there are inconsistencies, we will have to have an engagement with us relevant. Then, Mr. Bambani's situation is completely unacceptable. Principals are not allowed to refuse entry to people because they failed a year. It's absolutely not on. And I have asked my HOD that disciplinary action be instituted against that principal. We are trying to pressurize schools, actually, and it did pressurize schools, all schools, to take extra people when they can, including ex-models. And my HOD is writing a few letters to people, and they're not always very happy, but actually a lot of them are very accommodating, and they do try. The fact of the matter is, when people are paying fees that are almost equivalent to private school fees, if we're not doing too much, then those parents are just simply going to withdraw and go to the private sector, which we also don't want. So we don't want to destroy good schools, we want to improve quality at all schools, but we are asking all schools to mobile, we've already done that. They've got to go to Sunningdale, we've put a mobile school there. People are complaining about the mobile school because they don't think it looks very nice. So we can't really win. But actually, there's a bit of a misconception that mobiles are a cheap option. They cost $500,000 per mobile, about, to erect and prepare and everything. So they're not just like, just a quick option. That's all for me.
Also, it takes months. Mobiles aren't just standing around ready to be placed. It takes long. The other challenge is you have to find a balance between transport costs, putting down a school which needs teachers, more teachers, etc. And also, you need land available to be able to do that. That land is enormous. So it's a very tricky balance. But all of those options are looked at. For example, we have put down mobile schools in instances, particularly where the group is immediate. There isn't a time on its lifespan. Sometimes when looked after in a good disciplined school managed environment, it lasts a long time. Other times it gets wrecked almost overnight. So there are many factors that play a role in this space. I just also want to say that in the context of Alan can speak a bit more to the catch-up of the space. But where you have individual learners that get placed in schools, every school has got the responsibility to do that before the end of the first term that they caught up. Where there are large numbers in the district supports programs, for example, if you put full classes in or mobile classes, etc., then we ensure that there's support from the district for that space. Leslie, do you quickly want to speak about that particular learner transport scheme?
You can't exclude people from other provinces, all the recommended ones.
Within the question of the declining of applications for bus transport, if it is within the policy, they're not declined. We have to find the money for it. And so you'll see the budget grows every year, it's 422 million, if I'm not mistaken, in the current in the financial year. So it's a huge amount of money, but if they are more than 5 kilometres and within the policy range and there's not public transport and it's in rural areas, for example, then we allocate that space. I'm not going to speak more about life orientation. The Minister said that, I think quite correctly so as well. And the issue of, I just want to make a point, sexual harassment or sexual cases or allegations we are very serious about, as I am serious about learners attacking teachers. It's almost in the same context, but not exactly. But there have to be charges laid, and then they have to be investigated in fairness, because there's also the possibility of false charges that can destroy people if it's not correctly indicated. And so those things are looked at and are dealt with severely. About the criteria, I think, Chair, that's covered everything.
Thanks very much.
Members,
in terms of where we are, I'm going to ask if you have more questions that we can sit down and the presentation or requests in writing from the department.
Thank you, Chair. MEC, MGB, and the staff. Just wanted to check in the chamber earlier. SG mentioned, you know, once the schools and the communities around the schools to participate in the security and safety of the schools, walking buses, and so on and so forth. I know that there was a program referred to as Bambanani, possibly three administrations ago, which Premier Zilla killed. Sounds pretty much like what it is that you're talking about now. What is your view on re-establishing that, and maybe having a discussion with Premier Windy about that? Number two, in terms of the admissions policy of the schools' admissions policies are unique because it's set up by SGBs or applied by SGBs, and there's a number of criteria of what works and what doesn't, and feeder zones and not feeder zones and closeness and whatever other not. So how many of these criteria are being used to deny students entry into schools? And I suppose that most of the X Model C schools would look at affordability as one of the criteria, regardless of what the law says, that no school, no child will be denied access to a school based on affordability. So do you have any idea on what sort of numbers are and what the criteria is to deny as opposed to include, and what your responsibility is in terms of making that more accessible. In terms of your learner transport, I know Member McKenzie is a very interesting thing, but I think what I found quite strange is that you have contracts and you're having teachers and compliance officers, not traffic officers, inspect the vehicles and looking at doing a visual inspection on a vehicle without really going into detail. I'm not sure what your requirements are for contracts, if the side markings, doors, like the vehicles are actually marked as school transport, or they're just regular taxis that are now converted into additional seats. Are there anything that is a requirement in terms of your vehicle safety and so on? And then yeah, God's getting to the juicy bits.
Sorry, we're not juicy today. HOD and Minister, you can respond to the
sure.
Well, the Bambanani, I believe, was actually killed under Lynn Brown's premiership, not the former, not Adam Phillips, although that was an incorrect statement. Secondly, we've been working with Community Safety on something with the neighborhood watch. And the reason why is because Bangalani is the school system for their own people, they have all kinds of issues with them. You know, security of tenure and stuff like that, people then want to be paid and then they want to become permanent and various other things. So we also want to be more organized and more regulated, which is why actually Morris has been very involved in trying to develop the neighborhood watch model where they can be properly accredited by DOCS. They can have people who are vetted for security. Obviously, people working at schools need to be vetted from a security point of view. So that actually is a very successful model if it can be used by schools where neighborhood watches that are accredited can be contracted essentially by the school and then paid a small stipend where the neighborhood watch can decide who gets the money. It's not reliant on one individual who may get sick or whatever and it doesn't arrive at school. So that's, you know, we are looking at something that may be a little bit similar, but not, but it's, we believe it's a better model. Then as far as the Aboriginal policies are concerned, as I said, we also do have the appeal mechanism, but we have a diversity strategy which has been discussed with schools around the province. HRD has been also driving that with Sally Abrams to try and make aware schools who maybe aren't as inclusive as they should be and to encourage them to do that on their own. If they don't do it on their own, then they will take firmer measures. But we can't just act, but some people allege discrimination when there's not in fact discrimination. Sometimes they apply very late and then expect to be considered with people who applied, you know, in time. There are a lot of complicating factors, and the schools also do have a lot of, they have a lot of applications, and schools do have to decide at some point who's going to get in and who's not. But if it's unfair discrimination, then that is a valid right of appeal, and they stand a very good chance of succeeding in that. LTS, I'll give over to you.
Thank you. Very briefly, just I'm going to speak to the Bambinani, just to say that my point was actually the importance of community involvement in the safety of the school community generally, the surrounding people that live, the broader community, the need for ownership, and where schools, for example, have a good relationship with the community, that school is less likely to be vandalized and less likely to be challenged. And also, I've had schools now where we've turned around because of the way in which you engage, where community starts ushering kids to school because they're late, and the community is assisting in so many ways that in that quality. So it's really about the community involvement generally. I just want to add to the admissions policy, the right to, and I know you're aware of this, the right, of course, is enshrined in the Schools Act for governing bodies to set admissions policy. But what we have done where the need at the moment is so great and we're not meeting that need is to ensure that when there has been a spaces available and a demand and we can't place learners, that we have had engagement with schools through the districts in encouraging schools to take learners. It's not the access denied yet. And when that doesn't happen, I write and instruct the school to take learners. And when that doesn't happen, there's an appeal process then for the parents to appeal to the minister in such cases. And if those cases are then based on issues of inappropriate application of the school policies, then the minister must take action in that regard. I just want to say that from time to time, and you will recall that when incidents happen, we've asked schools to revise their admissions policy. We've asked them to be submitted, scrutinized by districts to see that they are not discriminatory. That doesn't mean that actions don't happen sometimes that are discriminatory. If we're aware of that, that gives us the opportunity to engage in that space. And the Minister made reference to the diversity strategy. I also want to say that affordability cannot be a determinant criteria for access to a public school. And if it's written in the criteria and we become aware of it, it's a matter that we will take up with the governing body. Lastly, just in terms of transport and safety, buses. When parents hire taxis, we've got no control over that. It's a private transport arrangement to schools. We're very worried about it when we take a look at the overcrowding of taxis that deliver kids, the way kids are squashed in. And what we do if we become aware of it, we alert the traffic department to it, and traffic officials from time to time do inspections, pull off, etc. In the context of buses for which we have contracts, there is regular inspection, and they have to do it in a six monthly inspections that have to be done for roadworthy and appropriacy to carry kids for public transport. the other measures that Lesbine spoke about is over and above that. Now, I rebel against that. I don't think a principal is the guy that ought to be saddled with inspecting a school bus, for example. But we ask them to do so as another special measure so that they can see the brake lights don't work when the bus pulls up, then they must raise that. So it's just another additional aspect to try to enhance it. We're very aware of the Rienendal case, and I mean, heaven forbid it happens again. These things are high on our register of concern, and I mean, we're transporting how many kids a day now? Did you say? I mean, thousands of kids a day, over 27,000 kilometers. I mean, it's a huge responsibility that is actually almost the responsibility of parents to see to it that their kids get to school. But because of the issues I raised earlier on poverty and so forth, we have to continue what we have to do.
Okay,
Mr. Kapir,
now I'm not
going to
be your follow-up. Our time is run out, so
therefore... I concede to your chairmanship.
Thank you. Minister, Department, thank you very much for availing yourselves today for this presentation. We shall do our recommendations and then communicate via email with the department as to the presentation that we have had today. So thank you very much.
Just two things. The one thing that I've asked, and I think, is the cases where they brought. There's two issues, separate issues. The one is the 5 kilometer radius. Those who they've declined, you know, for danger and those, and grade one learners. So I would want to just hear the cases they declined, and also I think. The important thing that we're not always aware of is when pupils are rejected and appeals, again, how many of those cases are overturned because they can't get into the school and they refuse and they go through the channels. If we can just get some statistics on that, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, I just want to assist you. So, exactly in terms of the admission in 2020, you
want to know how many appeals there were and what appeals has been overturned for that notice.
And what not overturned.
Yeah,
no.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's
right, Minister. Also on the issue of the 2020, just in terms of start of the year intake, Chair, you asked a question, which I think we must be a resolution, about the what mechanism does the department have in place to ensure that those learners will now do get placed, say, by the end of the month. How do they get to catch up with the work? We want to get to know that. And then on the issue of the former Model C schools and the admission, and not only them, because I see Kraaifontein did it also. Now, there was a disciplinary action, but whether we can, I mean, if we can get an investigation, if the department can investigate cases where the admissions policies of the schools themselves have not really been applied consistently by the schools.
So can I add one more? It's just, I think we must encourage, they've mentioned it, but we must encourage this green energy with, you know, grey water and stuff. So maybe, you know, we saw the one school doing it successfully and other people are paying a lot of money, and that they take from them the normal standards. They must do maintenance, you know, those type of things. So maybe we must just incorporate that also. What are the department doing to encourage schools or the districts to move to grey water and those type of things to bring the cost down when it comes to normal standards? And they can do other stuff with the money.
Okay.
Okay.
Shall we include that in the presentation
maybe
that we want?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Member Kama.
Thanks, Chair. The first one for me, I don't know whether Jay it will be through a presentation or what, but if we can get the department's math strategy, because I think for me the response always that we get of students not having interest does not really, because I think the question that member McKenzie was asking, whether there was a problem at grade 2 or where is the problem, so that we try to deal. So if we can get the main strategy of the department. The second one, Chair, is a detailed analysis of the students that are coming from outside the province and their performance. At what level are they mostly, so that we can see how are they affecting our results and what we can do to help in that. Well, the follow-up I asked really was not responded to. Was the FMC had said the HOD, but the issue of time, I understand. Thanks, Jen.
Member Kama, can I just add to what you asked in terms of the math strategy? If we can also, at that same presentation, and maybe it should be a presentation, talk to also the technical teachers that are, you know, of age or phasing out of the system, and what is the WCET plan in terms of introducing younger teachers to teach the technical subjects that we so much need at our schools of skill. I'm getting to you. Member Say, do you want to add something?
Yeah, just wanted to, just on the issue of the placement of learners, the underutilized classrooms. If we can get a sense as to what is the plan to ensure that underutilized classrooms are furnished, because I see they do speak about a plan to have teachers, but I don't see that last phase speaking about the furnishing of underutilized classrooms, especially those classrooms which have been built by private donors, so they've been able to save at least something.
Member Allen, do you have? Member McKenzie?
Chairperson, I'd like to, we talked about obviously the vandalism and those sort of issues, fencing that comes with it. Can we get from the department the latest UAMP and also a list of schools that's due for upgrading for the next 3 financial years? Because I think we'll be on the plan of the year. Yeah.
What's
the
Everyone got a copy of the 2020-2021 UAMP, and next one would only be available from April. So I can ask them for a copy, another copy for you, but then also ask once the new UM is available that they can use for that copy. Is that okay? Maybe we should then just ask once the new one is available.
Okay, but the list of the schools, because they are currently, for example, the Alpine Primary was due for upgrade late in the year, but they brought it forward to yesterday, they started yesterday.
Okay.
You understand? So, and I don't think it's an isolated incident. So which one for what other schools due for upgrade or for new fencing, or, and what are the new, where are they building the new schools in the next financial year?
Okay, so that would be different as to what we have received in the annual report. Because I know what is the school that we visited that also says it's up for upgrade, and then the principal said, you know, but not, they didn't receive any communication that their school is up for upgrade or replacement. It was replacement, Timberlake, and then the principal didn't even know that they, that's fine. Okay, let me say.
A quick one. I know they spoke about the role of the districts and the a lot about the principals. What I didn't get to raise sharply a lot was interrogating the role of circuit managers. Because, we came across this also.
Weak ones.
You know, just their role, their functionality, that type of thing. I don't know how to phrase it, but it's just something around that.
You want us to get the complete role of the circuit manager in the district that they are and what they are supposed to provide each school in the district.
Maybe just to help us to make it, just maybe give us the district circuit managers that's in the different areas, so they can give us a list of that, and then with that you just say, you know, the role of, then we also know. Then you can see who's doing well and who's not doing well and where we need to concentrate on. So in the Metro East, you see, we want to see who's the... We also want the name and see who's working there in that area. Then
yeah,
it makes it better.
I would actually agree with you. And then we can scrutinize and then call the department after to say, we have scrutinized.
Yes.
This is what we have found. So, also, in terms of... I remember that HOD said about the... disciplinary after the Lanesburg issue, but also in the same breath said that the principal is retiring, and he's once more retiring. He had been retiring before, but then he was there. So I would like to know who are they disciplining in terms of the Lanesburg issue? Who will be disciplined? Who are the persons? Remember, if that is it, then thank you very, very much for your availability. Remember, we are joining the Cultural Affairs and Sport tomorrow to Waves of Change. And we are leaving here at 1, is it? And I think that myself and member Sage, who has indicated that we will use WCPP Trust, and you then afterwards, I think you... have indicated you are using WCPP transport. Member Christians, are you going there?
I made an apology in writing.
Well, okay. And Member Karma, are you going there? And Member McKenzie, did you stay?
I'm going to get to know later, but I probably will.
Members, if you can, please put on your WCPP t-shirt, man.
That's
golf
MP.
Are we done, Chief?
Thank you very much for
Thank you.